This is the fourth in a series of presentations recorded at the Visions 2012 conference in Minneapolis, an event for people with blindness and low vision sponsored by the Foundation Fighting Blindness. For our monthly programs, we've selected those speakers whom we have found to be most appropriate for our International Low Vision Support Group audience. These presentations are also available in audio from the Foundation's website at www.blindness.org. We're grateful to the Foundation Fighting Blindness for making these recordings available to the public, and we hope you're enjoying the variety of topics we've chosen. In this session, Eric Weinmeier, the only blind man to ever climb all seven summits, offers an impactful message about harnessing the power of adversity and using it as a fuel for greatness, viewing adversity not as the enemy, but as the pathway. He emphasizes the importance of teamwork and talks about the daily struggle to pursue one's dreams. A former middle school teacher and wrestling coach, Eric Weinmeier is one of the most sought-after speakers in the world. Despite losing his vision at age 13, he has become an accomplished mountain climber, paraglider, skier, biker, and kayaker who has never let blindness interfere with his passion for an exhilarating and fulfilling life. Clearly, his accomplishments demonstrate that one does not have to have perfect eyesight to have extraordinary vision.
Thanks, everyone.
I am so excited to be here. It's been a real journey for me to think about, as a blind person, living as a blind person, not sort of getting shoved to the sidelines and listening to life go by, but sort of figuring out how to study the changes in our lives, big changes. You know, are we going to grow and evolve to a certain degree of success, or do we sort of just camp out on the side of the mountain and ultimately stagnate? Do we get crushed by adversity, as so many people do, or do we figure out a way to flourish in the face of it? Does uncertainty destroy us, or are we able to flourish in all the uncertainties that are all around us in the modern world, especially as we live with these diseases like blindness or hearing impairment? And so for me, you know, being a blind climber, it's been pretty wild. It's not like there's a roadmap in front of me. It's definitely forced me to embrace uncertainty. It's sort of like being a Jamaican bobsledder, being a blind climber. The word blind and climber don't really even go together. So it's been really fun not just to climb mountains, but to share a message that when we take on a no barriers mindset, when we change our thinking, we can go to amazing places. For instance, I wanted to climb the seven summits. One of those was Mount Everest. The biggest crux of Mount Everest for me was right at a base camp. It was the Khumbu Icefall, almost 3,000 feet of jumbled up boulders of ice of every size imaginable, from skyscrapers to baseballs all piled on top of each other, exploding and collapsing and tumbling down the mountain like a river of ice. It moves 3 feet a day. It doesn't meet Americans with Disability Act standards either. So I was really worried about the ice fall. And even worse than the ice fall was the fact that there were these crevasses. There are hundreds of crevasses. Some of them are so wide you can't get across them in any other way except the Sherpas will lay these ladders across the crevasses, five ladders lashed together with Sherpa Kmart boat twine. You got to get across these ladders quickly and safely. In fact, I was scared, but my teammates, they could see. You know, they were even more scared than me because they got to look down through the rungs of the ladder. The Sherpas say if you fall into a crevasse on Everest, you'll wind up in Minneapolis. And a lot of people said we were going to have a disaster up there. We're going to have an absolute epic. But instead, we still hold the world record. 19 of our team, 19 out of 21, reached the summit. The most people from one team to reach the summit of Everest in a single day. Well, I also wanted to continue my journey to climb the seven summits. I wanted to climb the tallest peak in Europe as part of that, Mount Elbrus. 18,500 feet, not quite as high as Everest. But we wanted, you know, we didn't want to just sort of climb another mountain. I wanted to add a new challenge to the mix. We wanted to ski down from the summit, which we did, about 10,000 feet from summit to base camp. My friend Eric Alexander, he's one of my ski guides. We trained for a year so we could really hone our system. Eric gets out in front and yells very precise directions. I think it's sort of, those of you who ski, it's very similar to the way the Blue Angels fly in formation. And the problem was that when we got to Mount Elbrus, the summit, it was a total whiteout. They call it, if you can see, they call it 0-0. Everything merges together, the ground and the sky, you can't tell the difference. You know, there's no contrast. And so we were skiing down in the storm. Eric's yelling out directions. I noticed he was behind me, pretty far behind me. And later, I asked him why. He said later, he told me he was using the bright red contrast of my jacket to tell him where the drop-offs were. I do like taking on new challenges. And so after the seven summits, we wanted to continue to challenge ourselves and find new things to do, you know, just sort of living that no barriers lifestyle. And so I hooked up with a group of friends who wanted to try an adventure race. And we trained for a couple of years. We did some adventure races, and we wound up actually doing maybe the toughest adventure race in the world, Primal Quest, almost 500 miles, 60,000 feet of elevation gain, no timeouts. You start in teams of four. You have to cross the finish line in teams of four. If one person drops, the whole team is eliminated. And we warmed up actually a couple months before Primal Quest with a five-day race across Greenland. We wound up doing the Primal Quest. There were 42 teams out of 80 that crossed the finish line. We were one of those teams. And my first of the seven summits was maybe the hardest for me. Denali, the great one, the high one in the Inuit language, 20,300 feet. We flew planes, ski planes onto the Kiltna Glacier. They actually land on skis on the snow. And 19 days later, we crossed the summit ridge. It was 4:30 in the afternoon. It turned out to be Helen Keller's birthday that we stood on top. We didn't know that. And we were worried about getting down. 90% of accidents happen on the way down when you let down your focus. But we had also, we were really exhilarated too because we had timed it so well. We were near the top. My dad and my two brothers, my wife, they were circling above us in a Cessna plane watching us take our last steps onto the summit. It was really cool. We all had these red suits on and we were waving our ski poles at the plane and we're cheering. And I said to Jeff, I said, "Hey Jeff, I want my family to know I'm here, that I made it." You know, and he said, "I think they're going to know you're the only one waving your ski pole in the wrong direction." It's good having friends, I think. We got down safely. I lay in the snow in front of our igloo that we had built up there for a good long time. I'd never done something so physically demanding, so mentally demanding, something that had asked so much out of myself. I mean, I'll never forget this. Half of me laying there in the snow on my belly, I just knew I wasn't cut out for this life. I was not tough enough. I wasn't resilient enough. This was the last thing a blind person was supposed to be doing with his life. But the other half of me didn't care. The other half of me wanted to figure out how to climb forever. And I've had such a good time in the mountains. You know, climbing to the tops of mountains, coming down with friends around me. I love summits. They're goals. They're linear. They're step by step. But I think in my life, and I think in your life too, what's been more important than any one goal is what I call vision. You know, I think of vision, maybe I see it a little differently than others. It's more of an internal vision, a vision of how we see ourselves living our lives, impacting the world, serving other people, what kind of legacy we want to leave behind us. And I think sometimes people focus on these long lists of goals. They can become isolated and fragmented, maybe even spin out of control. When I think we need to continually reconnect with that unifying vision that takes those goals and binds them together and gives them power, gives them fuel. And, you know, I have to say, though, when I went blind from that very rare disease, juvenile retinoschisis, I didn't know any blind people. I wasn't thinking about a vision. I was just thinking about survival, just getting through the day, you know, being led from class to class, being led to the bathroom. I hated blindness. It was like a storm that had descended upon me with such force, such viciousness, I thought I'd be crushed by it. I remember sitting in the cafeteria, listening to all the excitement and laughter, and all the jokes, all the food fights passing me by that I wanted to be a part of. You know, I wasn't afraid to go blind. I mean, you might disagree, but I mean, I think that's a myth. I wasn't afraid to go blind and see blackness or see darkness. What I was afraid of was that I would be swept to the sidelines, that I'd be forgotten, that my life would be meaningless, a life lived for nothing. That was terrifying. And I could still see just a tiny bit out of my right eye as I lost the last traces of vision. And one of the things I could still do was to watch TV if I pushed my face right up against the set. And I was watching a show one night, and it was called That's Incredible. Some of you might remember it in the 80s. They were focusing on a guy named Terry Fox. Terry was a Canadian. He had lost a leg to cancer, and he was still in the hospital when he decided that he was going to run across Canada. Thousands of miles. Now, this, first of all, is not the intuitive decision that a person in his situation was supposed to make. Most people would have just dug in their heels and focused on survival. Instead, Terry did the exact opposite. It was as though he understood that there was, you know, between stimulus and response, between the things that happen to you and the way you're supposed to react, there's a space. And in that space, you have a choice. It's not an easy choice, but it's a choice nevertheless. And Terry chose to attack. The miles took a terrible toll on his body, on his stump. The look on his face, it was an absolute contradiction, full of exhaustion, yet at the same time full of exaltation. And I thought to myself, there's something inside of us, I can only describe it as a light. You know, it seemed to be able to feed on frustration, on setbacks, to use those things as fuel. The greater the challenge, the brighter that light seemed to burn. I wondered if that light existed in me, and if I could use it in my life to turn into the storm of life and emerge on the other side, not just unscathed, not just damaged as little as possible, but actually stronger and better. And so it was a few weeks after that, maybe a month, when I got this newsletter in Braille of a group taking blind kids rock climbing. And I ran my hand up the wall of my room and I thought, who would be crazy enough to take a blind kid rock climbing? So I signed up. I was tired of building walls around myself and protecting myself. Like Terry, I wanted to attack. And so I found through trial and error that I could do a pull-up and I could scan my hand across the face. And just before I was ready to lose strength in my forearms and fingers, I'd find just enough to dig my fingers into a little crack or pocket to do another pull-up and scan my other hand across the face. I left a lot of blood and skin on the rock that first time. But I got to the top and I'll never forget, it was so exhilarating. It was like a rebirth, the texture of the rocks under my hands and the patterns of hot and cold as the sun touched the rock and the sound of space. When I got up high, that sound of space moving out infinitely around me, it was beautiful. But I got to admit, it was also kind of scary. I don't know, in a way, whether we're blind or not. I think in a way, everyone's sort of climbing blind, you know, you're predicting and calculating, you're hoping, you're praying, your charts, your graphs, your research, they lead you to believe that you will find what you're looking for. But you understand there's no guarantee. You know, it's that moment when we've committed ourselves to it, our minds and our bodies, we know it's almost impossible to turn back. I think that fear, it's overwhelming, you know, that fear of failure, of flopping on our face, of making a mistake that affects people, of maybe the fear that we've climbed as high as we can ever go in our lives. You know, there's just nowhere else to go but down. I think all those fears, they conspire against us and they paralyze us. Well, I think there's a big difference between many people and pioneers. There are a lot of pioneers as part of this organization. You know, pioneers understand life's an ongoing, never-ending process of reaching out into the darkness when we don't know exactly what we'll find. Constantly reaching towards immense possibilities. I mean, those possibilities are always unseen. They're sensed. While so many others allow that darkness to paralyze them. I reached out that day. I know we reach out every day. For me, it's led to some great adventures. This is the 3,300-foot overhanging granite monolith of El Capitan that we climbed in a few days. And, you know, I think in this group, it's probably not as prevalent, but in some groups, I always like to say that, like, first of all, I want to say I'm not a crazy blind guy, like a blind evil Knievel, you know, getting shot across the Grand Canyon. You know, blind is okay. Blind and stupid, that could be fatal. I see myself more as a problem solver, as an innovator. Yeah, I love looking at things that maybe people see as impossible, improbable, unlikely, and then figuring out a way forward. I'm motivated in a similar way as the pioneers of the past, like Sir Edmund Hillary, like Tenzing Norgay, by a sense of what's possible. And I think all of us, I think it's so important to see ourselves as modern-day pioneers. You know, it doesn't mean that we're climbing scary mountains. It just means that we're motivated from within by that internal vision rather than from external factors that can change so quickly. You know, we're motivated by a sense of discovery. See, a lot of people, they thought you had to see to climb. But I've found through the years that the most exciting, and I'll admit, the most torturous aspect of life is when we reach out beyond convention and we discover those unexpected ways of crossing through those blurry lines between what maybe others see as impossible or improbable, but what we believe in our hearts to be fully possible. I think here's the trouble, though. When we reach out day after day with that pioneering spirit, it's not going to be an easy road. In fact, the further we reach, the farther we reach, the more adversity we bring into our lives. I think greatness and adversity, they go hand in hand. There is no way to separate them. Who wants that? And I think this relationship also works in reverse. Because when we kind of look at the existing barriers, the existing challenges that are in our lives, and we attack them in the right way, it can release tremendous energy and potential within us. But I think it takes a lot of courage, you know, to look at the challenges in our lives and really face them head on. You know, it's like being able to look sometimes even at a storm on the horizon. It takes a lot of courage to look at it straight on, you know, to turn into that storm, to walk into its very midst. I call these people alchemists. Alchemists. They can take the lead that life piles on top of them, and they'll figure out a way to transform it into gold. With an alchemist, they don't just do the traditional things that you hear about. They don't just deal well with adversity or avoid it. That's impossible. They don't even overcome it. I've never quite understood what that meant. What these alchemists do is they've figured out how to seize hold of that storm of adversity that swirls around us, to harness its energy and use that energy to propel themselves forward to places that they never would have gone to in any other way. With an alchemist, you know, you can throw them in the midst of a fierce, uncertain environment. You can strip away their resources. You can throw roadblocks in front of them, and they'll still find a way to win. I think they find a way to win not despite adversity, but because of it. I think if we want to win and grow and build great support systems around us, I think the challenges we face, it might be actually an advantage. I think there's a lot of adversity out there, as you know. I mean, there's a tough economy. Finding research dollars is a huge challenge. Building your community is a huge challenge. And obviously, as people with visual impairment and hearing impairment, life is a big challenge. There are so many challenges, I don't have to list them all. But I think the world is also crying out for alchemy. And you may be the alchemists. You and this community may be one of the world's greatest hopes for alchemy. But I don't think we harness the power of adversity just to say, hey, look at us on the top here. It's not just about that. I think it's about, as you know, helping other people to harness their own adversity and tap into their own inner light. As you know, there's lots of adversity. There are a lot of challenges that are going to keep us very busy. But I don't think this is the time to lose our will, you know, to be clouded by fear and doubt, to be swept to the sidelines and forgotten. I think this is the greatest time, the greatest moment in history to be a pioneer, to to reach out, to build a great team, along the way to take lead and sometimes turn it into gold. I think we do this not just for the sake of yourself or your own team, your own family, but for the sake of this wondrous world that we live in. Helen Keller, she said, "I'm only one, but still I'm one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." I think that's a great message. Thank you very much, everyone. Just keep climbing. Thank you.